Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com. Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome to the fire.
Welcome to the fire, boys. My name is Parker McDonald.
And I'm Walter Lee, and we'll be your hosts on this episode of the Southern Collective Hunting Podcast. If you're a new hunter trying to learn the basics,
or you're a veteran woodsman just trying to get through your workday, there's always a place at our campfire for you.
Speaking of the fire, we would love it if you guys would join our growing Patreon community and be a part of the best and only digital deer camp south of Mason-Dixon Line.
Come on. If you'd like to learn more, click on the link in the show notes. But for now, Walt,
welcome to the fire.
Okay, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Southern Collective Podcast. Tonight we've got a small crowd, but a powerful crowd at that. Walt is taking care of a sick kid, Parker is hunting, and Brett just got back from a successful hunting trip, so we're letting him have the night off. But regardless of that, I'm going to be your host tonight, Matthew Reeves, running this. And we've got a special guest, tonight. It's, Mr. Jake Lyshen. So Jake, how are you doing tonight, man?
I'm good, man. Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, man, I'm glad we finally got the stars to align and we're here and talking. And we've already got into some stuff that I thought was good. So we went ahead and press record and running with it. So you're on the road right now, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm on the road. Currently, trying to throw a couple hunts in between work shifts on the road. So, trying to track one down in Illinois as best I can. So,
and when you told me you were on the road since what, August 15th, is that what you said?
Yeah, it's been since August 15th.
Man,
it's a lot.
That'll wear you down, but you're getting to hunt when you can, taking care of your work when you can as well.
Yep. I've structured my season. It's kind of ended up this way, but, I've had the first week of every month, so far this year, and then a little bit here and there. If I get a couple days in between, that's awesome. But where I kind of am making my bread and butter is that first week of each month, first week of September, October, and now November.
Man, that's great. You're hitting the cold fronts just right, right before them. It seems how they're falling this year.
Dude, you're telling me it's the cold front's awesome here. I mean, it's cold for a southern guy. I mean, it's it was in the low 20s, high teens the other morning, and yesterday evening when I sat, it was 32 with 48 mile an hour winds. That's pretty chilly.
Dang, dude.
I'm not gonna lie.
Well, we've covered that you're on the road. You've been on the road since August 15th. For the listeners who don't know who you are or what you do, kind of just give them a rundown of how you're able to do this.
Yep. So for everybody you know, hasn't had the chance to pop on to any of the other podcasts I've done with the good folks here at Southern Collective. I work in the content creation business. So myself and a team of awesome, like-minded individuals through our business, Land Limited, do commercial photography and filmmaking for hunting brands and adventure brands. It's not exclusively hunting, but it does take us to a lot of places where we end up working for a lot of hunting brands. And, you know, it's everybody wants photography and video work in the fall, which unfortunately is the time when I want the most time off. And those two things don't play well together. So you kind of have to figure out how to make both worlds meet. And the best way that I've found to do that is, you know, since I never really know what states I'm going to for work, I just plan to kind of have an open schedule here and there, and I pick up a tag when I can, and live out of my truck off and on in the fall. I will fly home and travel a good bit, but I usually will leave my truck in states that I know that I'll have a week or 3 or 4 days to hunt in between work projects. You know, fly back in, get in the truck, go hunt for a few days, fly back out for work. So it's a wild life right now.
Man, that sounds, you know, people probably listening to this and are wishing that was their life, man. So that's awesome that you're able to do that. And through this, you've been able to see a lot of different states, see a lot of different deer populations, and see kind of how every deer reacts. I know you've made it down here to Alabama, Florida, Georgia, and like you said, you're from the North Carolina area. So you've had your fair share with this. So the main objective really I want to do for this podcast is, you know, talk about, you know, in-season sign. We jumped on that a little bit, as well as these areas where deer may not be a bunch of sign. You know, go into the Midwest, you see sign around every corner, it seems. You know, there's a rub here, there's a scrape there, and that's portrayed to a lot of us Southern folks as that's what we're supposed to see, but it's really not what we see. So that's mainly what I want to cover here. So starting out, man, I want to jump into Alabama just because I'm an Alabama boy. Like, that's just what I do. I kind of know where you were as far as where you were hunting, and the kind of region. But when you came down here, was it anything like your home state?
It was, only because I had, you know, and I had talked to Parker about that region of the state and was looking for somewhere that was, you know, it's a back step here. Anytime I try to go out of state, or I know I'm going to go out of state to hunt, and Alabama is a unique one because it's not one that I am on the road hunting. I'm getting the chance to really target Alabama and say, I'm going to go here to hunt and actually plan to go there. So what I was trying to do was to find relatable habitat types to what I already know and I'm familiar with in the Southeast. So in North Carolina, you know, most of the stuff that I'm hunting is bottomland, river bottom, or a number of different, you know, versions of just swampy, lowland country. It can have, you know, low deer densities at times, but it's just tough to hunt. It's tough to find sign in, and I think it's tough to just be in general.
Yeah, and so, especially map scouting those places. Like, when I get, like, I can map scout pretty good on terrain, but those flat lands, you've got to put a lot of work in. You've got to cover a lot of miles to actually find that sign.
Yep, and I think that's one of the biggest things that I think guys miss out on, or maybe they don't take to heart enough. And I know you started with, when we led into this conversation, was talking about, you know, the Midwest and kind of maybe the false narratives that have come to, you know, the collective hunting community from, you know, the few Midwestern states, Illinois, Iowa, you know, the bread and butter places, Kansas, where everybody expects to see sign. Well, I think in a lot of places like our, I actually would, it's crazy to say, but I prefer to hunt that environment even over kind of what I'm dealing with right now in the Midwest, or what I feel like a typical Midwestern hunter would run into. And it's almost because it's like overwhelming. It's death by too much sign.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, you end up in a position where, and not all the time, like there are moments where you, the deer are in real sparse pockets. You know, like for example, here in Illinois, what I'm seeing right now is, you know, they're right at the beginning of the rut. So they've stopped hitting sign. And for whatever reason, because of weather, they didn't lay a lot down to begin with as far as rubs went. So there's not a ton of just sign to identify where they were, or, you know, in season sign to kind of play off of maybe any routine patterns from this year. And the scrapes aren't super lit up because they're right at the forefront of chasing. So you're kind of having to go in and explore and find doe groups and then take your best guess and do observation sits to whittle down where you think a buck may move, or hunt big core travel routes.
Yeah.
That's stressful. because you never really know if you're making the right call until you actually get to see one on the hoof and you can make a game plan. And you know, it's a little, there's a higher buck density, I think, here in the Midwest. So it's a little easier from that sense. But the same principle applies back in the South. So if I was in the Carolinas or Virginia or Georgia or wherever, you know, one of the main things that I'm trying to focus on is just identifying like condensed sign, specifically in any sort of key area. So unlike here, we'll take, for example, in the Midwest, you may have a piece of public land that's 200 acres or 100 acres. And it's loaded with sign, you know, or we'll say it's 1,000 acres. The whole 1,000 acres is on and off loaded with sign, and there's deer using a majority of it at different times. Now, some of it may be at night, but for the most part, there's enough deer for there to be deer using it, and you're seeing sign pop up intermittently all over the place.
Right.
Back home, you know, in the Southeast, I typically find that those deer are tied into a very specific spot. So like you may have 100 acres or 50 acres or 25 acres out of that 1,000 that's applicable and that the deer are consistently.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree, man. And like you said, like there's like, we do have areas that get like very heavily hit with sign, and those are that's that 25 acres you're talking about. Like that's where you need to be hunting. It's not like I've walked a whole day and seen one rub. Like you walk 4 miles and you see one rub, and that's just part of it. You go somewhere else like the Midwest and you walk 4 miles, you may see 100 rubs, and then you're in that, well, where do I go? It's kind of hard to find that X hits the spot. But right now, where I'm at, you know, Alabama's got so many different ruts. You know, there's deer rutting right now. There'll be deer rutting about every month. I'm starting to see some scrapes, you know, start to be put down, and knowing, you know, what do you hunt a scrape or not, you know, I like to hunt scrapes. I've had success over scrapes, and finding the right scrape can be tough. But this one spot I hunt, there's a lot of bucks. Like there's more bucks than does on this place, but they just don't lay down the sign like you would think. So, you know, I'm trying to wrap my head around, how do I find the right trail? How do I time these deer up to be in that area at the right time? And, man, it's tough trying to figure out a buck that just doesn't lay down a bunch of sign. You know, we have guys talking about that in polo about Florida. You know, they can be very isolated. So finding those key pockets, man, that's huge. I mean, how long would it, do you say it would take you just scouting time before you hunt to find one of those pockets?
I think it depends on the size of the property. You know, I really try to focus on, you know, whether I'm out of state or in state. So let's take, you know, in state, for example, if I'm back home or if I'm in Alabama, I'm trying to pick a kind of like a mix of different properties that are manageable that I can have bite-sized chunks come off of, right? So like, let's say I come to Alabama, I typically try to plan for 5 to 10 days, you know, usually 7 to 10. But you know, sometimes you got to cut it short with work. You know, but let's say 5 to 10 days, I know that's tough for some for vacation time, but I really feel like you need at least 2 days on the front of your hunt to just cover ground. And you're doing that on specific pieces that you want to spend time on that are manageable. And what I mean by manageable is you could go to a big piece of public. Let's say you go to Bankhead, right? Well, Bankhead's huge.
Yeah.
it's giant. You know, you could walk for days and not cover, you know, you're covering all the exact same terrain type, and those deer may just not be in that terrain type at that time. Or maybe they're tied into something else, or they're pushed in one place, or maybe they're using a very small like type of that landscape that it's just going to be so hard for you to drill down on in such a short window. You're better off to narrow your scope down and say, I'm going to go to this 200 acre piece of public, or this small portion of Bankhead, and say, this is relatable. Like, I know how to work with this, whether it's cutovers or bottomland or ridges, oak hammocks, whatever. And then take your time with that 200 acres and say, I'm going to kill the best buck on this piece or on a couple different pieces. Maybe walk that 200 as hard as you can, and there's nothing there you're interested in, you know, so you go bounce to another 100 or 200 acre piece and you do the same thing. And you kind of systematically break down those properties in a way that allows you to make educated decisions as best as possible, you know, to where you can actually execute on a good whitetail like that.
That's good information, because I think, like you said, a lot of people just get so overwhelmed with these bigger portions. Like the last couple of years, I've really been trying to build my intel over the years as far as like, hey, I know this spot produces at this time of the year. I know the signs here. I mean, I'm dealing with a, you know, 100,000 acres. Where do you start on 100,000 acres? You know, like you said, a 200 block, pick out a 200 acre block or whatever, you know, say it's like you make it your own little hunting club and you learn that like the back of your hand. And year after year, you're going to keep building that information. So that's huge, I think, because we do have a lot of options here, and there, a lot of them look the same, like you're saying, like with Bankhead. I've never gone up there personally, but I've had people, you know, they come in from out of state and they're like, man, they hear all the stories of the big deer, which there are big deer there, but you're either one going to get really, really lucky, or you've got to put in some time to find those jokers.
Yep. And here's the thing, man. I think it's that way everywhere, you know, so even if you are a non-resident and you're coming into Alabama, you know, I think that the big thing, well, and I, you know, we're talking about Alabama right now, but this is applicable everywhere. You know, you're looking to find a property you can build a relationship with over time. And yes, I think that there are some properties in some states where you have a higher likelihood of harvesting a buck on that first attempt through. And I think that you can have success like that, but I'm always trying to plan for me for further ahead. I'm hunting today to try to harvest tomorrow, but I'm also paying attention, expecting like, hey, I'm going to be back here again at some point. You know, it may not be next year, maybe the year after that, but I don't intend to stop travel hunting. You know, as I, you know, get older and my life kind of solidifies a little bit more, I'm sure I'll do it a little bit less frequently, but I'll still be harping on the same properties, the same places, the same good, successful spots that I have found over time. And I think that's important, even if you are, as you're saying, like finding a piece of public near yourself and making it your own hunt club per se, you know, if there's one thing that I've learned is that, especially with bucks, they tend to do the same thing over and over again. Not always, but what I mean by that is they tend to use the landscape in the same way. they tend to do similar things because there's a reason they're doing it. And usually it's because they're not dying.
So
it's like, you can pretty much count on if you find a really good spot, even if that spot doesn't produce year after year, you could try to replicate that scenario on other pieces of public ground or other pieces of private ground and say, okay, I know this works. Like, we'll use beaver dams for an example. They're everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. You got beaver dams in the south, beaver dams in the north. Well, if you get a big beaver dam that's connecting two big, you know, bodies of land masses, you know, or crossing a creek, those deer are going to use that. That's a bridge. That's past the least resistance, you know? So that's just something that you can count on and look for a pinch point or a funnel that's applicable. And the same thing applies up north as it does down south, you know, east, west. They're going to do things somewhat similarly based on security. And I think that's probably where I differentiate my strategy from most. Is the number one thing I'm looking for is security first, not food, not water, not even does. It's looking for security first.
Yeah. That's finding that security, especially in, you know, these big open hardwood areas, that can be not being able to see it on a map, you know, with whether it's a laurel thicket under the forest, you know, canopy, or just a hillside they like to bed on. I mean, that can get pretty tough if you're not just, you know, putting boots on the ground. But this, correct me if I'm wrong on this statistic, and this may just be close, I'm just throwing it out there, but typically on an out-of-state hunt, it's like your third trip before you tag out, or second.
I don't know necessarily about you know, the overall number on hunters. I think that if you're I would want to dig into that number, and I would be curious as to like how many, you know, what do those trips constitute? Are they 2-day trips or 3-day trips, or are they like 5 to 10 day trips?
Right.
So for perspective, on my out of state trips, most of the time when I make a harvest, it's usually somewhere around that day 5 to 10.
Yeah.
Almost always. Mm-hmm. Like it's very rarely, if ever, I can't remember a time where it's been in the first 3 days. And the reason for that is because you're building a relationship with that land, right? You're figuring it out. And like, I don't have the cards in my deck to make a play on a mature buck after only a day to three. I don't care how good you are. Like, you know, he's either got to be really stupid or you got to be really lucky.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
that's right. I mean, yeah, most of my trips, you know, I'd love to go on, you know, one of those 7 to 10 days. Most of mine are 4 to 5. So I'm having to go back, you know, multiple times. And, you know, this year I've hunted a spot in Kentucky for the second year in a row. And I got lucky and tagged out on the first morning, but I had a bunch of intel from the previous year to go off of. And I think that's just, you know, that's huge in out of state hunts, is building that intel.
I agree. And I think that that's, you know, we're going to continue to harp on the whole building relationship with the property. And I'll say it over and over again, only because I can't get a behind how important it is for you to have a piece of property that, you know, like the back of your hand, like it's your own hunt club.
Yeah.
But on top of that, you know, I think.
Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Spend your Saturdays with Life on the Water. Join Captain Brandon Simmons for fishing, diving, travel, and so much more.
You want to succeed. You want to fish. You want to be one of the greatest.
Oh, look at that thing, dude. Wow.
Oh. Let's see what kind of trouble we can get into today.
Don't miss Life on the Water every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. The destination for outdoor entertainment.
When you're building that year-over-year intel, I assume that when you went back, you scouted it some, you know, even when you went back to reaffirm what you had seen. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's where a lot of guys make a mistake, right? Is like, I think that they'll go, let's say you go to Nebraska and you go hunt Nebraska or, you know, Georgia, and you hunted this property last year. You feel good about it. You go sit, you know, you don't plan any scouting. You just show up. You're like, hey, man, I had great sits here. I had great sits here. You know, I saw a lot of deer. There wasn't any pressure. Well, that doesn't mean that the deer are going to be there this year. It just means that they were there last year.
Right.
You know, I tell guys all the time, the best thing that you can do is delete your pins on Onyx and restart fresh every single year, because those pins will get you in trouble so many times. Like that, I mean, you can pick a general area. Like we said, let's say on that public, you figure out that there's 100 acres of that piece. That's the money zone. That's where they're at. Well, within that, you can't rely exclusively on historical sign. You have to go and reaffirm that sign is there, just like you did the first time, even if it's only, you know, whether it's a year apart or 2 or 3 weeks apart. That first day is pivotal for you to go in and do a quick walkthrough of that whole area, make sure that everything is exactly the same, and then plan your sits.
Yeah.
You know, but I think a lot of guys are too afraid to bump deer.
Yeah. That's one thing that I've started doing, and not being afraid of bumping deer. Like, I mean, if you can bump a deer, they're telling you where they're at. So then get a game plan on it. I think a lot of people think when they bump a deer, their hunt's over. Just use that for the next one, man. But
yeah, that's well. And the thing is, there's a difference in bumping a deer from a tree and bumping a deer on the ground. Like, you know how much stuff bumps deer on the ground? Like, they get bumped. They get bumped all the time.
Yeah, that's like where all their threats come from, you know, ground exactly. Ground threats.
Yep.
But you got me on the pins, though. I probably need to go delete some, because I do that a good bit. But I kind of want to segue to go ahead.
Go ahead. I don't know. I was just going to say a quick note on that. So you can folder your pins by year. So you can actually keep your historical sign, but you can remove it off of your map.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool to do.
Yeah.
So for all of you Onyx users out there, just start selecting all your pins and moving them into a specific folder for that calendar year. And then you can kind of pick and choose what you do and don't want to display, so you're not getting overwhelmed.
Man, that's huge. Yeah. I'll go look at a map that I have, and there's just pins everywhere. And I've had to start dating stuff, you know, and trying to get everything going. But that's awesome, man. But no, to segue, kind of what I've been seeing through the whole whitetail, you know, season so far, is the amount of acorns that are on the ground right now. There's so many of them. I mean, are you seeing a ton right now?
Yeah, there's a lot of acorns up here. There's also a lot back home. You know, all of my guys that are keeping me up to speed on everything back in North Carolina are saying the same thing. And in the mountains, there is just a ton of food, which makes it extra difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, you always hear, hey, find the hot feed tree, you know, the one that looks like it's been tilled up with all the poop under it and whatnot. And I've spent a lot of time in the woods this year and I have yet to find one. And I just think these deer are able to meander through the woods and pick up food where they want to, you know, whether they're in the thicket and can just stand up and eat and lay back down. It just kind of, it's blown my mind because I personally don't like when it's just a bumper crop of acorns because it makes it harder for me.
I agree. It definitely makes it harder. Well, what it does is it makes it, I think there's not really a way for you to just dial in on where they're eating. You know, so it makes it all that much more important to walk. You know, and when I mean walk, I mean, you're walking twice for every time you hunt, you know, essentially, because you're no longer looking for food. You know, I think a good way to look at this, Matt, do you know who Grant Woods is?
Yeah.
He's a wildlife biologist out of Missouri,
yeah,
right? He does Growing Deer TV. So one of the things that I took away, I used to watch Grant's videos all the time. And one of the biggest things I ever took away from him was he preaches when you're doing land management, and follow me here, this will circle back around to our acorn situation, is to, when you're looking at your property, whether it's a piece of private land or public land, to zoom out and look at the bigger picture on the map. Look at what you have the most readily available and what you have the least of. And what your neighbors have the most readily available and what your neighbors have the least of, and start to build yourself a plan of what your deer are doing based on the likelihood of what you have or don't have access to, or how you need to improve your land so that you make your property the most advantageous for that collective deer herd. When you get a lot of acorns or a lot of food, so let's say you, you know, it could be acorns, it could be corn. Who knows? You know, it could be a big ag. Let's say you have let's say it's all peanut fields and you got tiny woodlots all around you. You know, I think it's important that you zoom out and you go, okay, the thing that I can't control is food. Like there's no way for me to control that because they can eat everywhere. So let's look at what we can control. So parts of the state, parts of the U.S. this year, we're in a drought. So were you in a drought area? Was water a limited resource? If so, those bucks are probably going to relate to that water. Now they may not be, you know, within 200 yards of it, but if there's a pond and it's the only pond on the property, you could draw, you know, a half mile circle around that pond and say, okay, this is where I'm going to start. And same thing applies with security cover. So if you're in an area that's big, mature timber stand, like if I hunt Virginia in the National Forest, or if I'm hunting National Forest land in general, Western North Carolina, Virginia, really anywhere, or in Central North Carolina, if I'm hunting big game lands, a lot of that is hard, giant, mature timber, and the limiting resource is not food or water, but security cover. So when I'm looking at it, I'm looking at habitat diversity. So now I'm whittling my area down based on what I know that buck has to prioritize to survive there. You know, so I think people get so caught up on food that they lose sight of the fact that it's great when there's not a lot of it and you can pinpoint it and they're going to go right here and eat, you know, just like if they're going to exit in the corner of a field and you can hang your stand and do your thing. But it's not really the most consistent way to be successful on a whitetail, in my opinion. The most consistent way is to find out whatever that limiting resource is and to hone in on that.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I think we all get tied up at some point in the, you know, the feel-good finds and whatnot like that. And that's I feel nobody considers that. I mean, you saying that's made me think of, you know, five spots that I need to go back and look at to try to find those, you know, quote unquote, limited resources, because there's a limited resource everywhere you hunt. You just got to look for it.
Exactly. And it's the same thing. Like, you may have a property that's covered in thick, right? Like, it, maybe your limited resources is, you know, field edges or openings, or, you know, it works both ways. It doesn't have to just be a property with a lot of oaks and hard timber. It doesn't have to be a property that's all fields with little timber, you know, or big open bottom land or whatever. Look at your landscape and go, what are the things that I have the fewest of here? You know, what does a buck need to survive? Food, water, cover. You know, those are the three things he needs. So depending on the time of the year, you know, and you'll have to break that down depending on, like, is it September, October, November, December, you know, and what is his priority structure going to be during that window, you know, but you can look at those limited resources and say, okay, he's going to need this. He may not be here right now, but if I can go find a track, or if I can go find sign, I can backtrack him to where I think I can kill him.
Yeah, man, that's good stuff. I mean, just, the things we don't think about that are right in front of us are huge for us. Now, you've mentioned Virginia a pretty good bit, you know, hunting in it, the Virginia National Forest and all that. Now, are you, as far as terrain, do you like hunting terrain much?
I do, and I don't want to claim to be like this serial, you know, Virginia big buck killer. I'm still getting a lot of learning done in Virginia. The mountains are an awesome and challenging place all at the same time. But have definitely had some success there and had the chance to find a lot of really good sign. I'm very excited about hunting this year in early December, which is the week that I have pegged to go, you know, give my 7-day attempt at Virginia. Got some intel, you know, there and some cameras out, and I'm doing my thing and just waiting, buying my time until I'm home and I can get in there. But
yeah, I've got a special place in my heart for mountain deer. I've killed a couple, you know, like you said, I'm no wizard at it, still trying to learn it. But in the mountains with how these deer travel, I mean, you hunt the hills, you can see very defined trails. They look like they're beat down. But there's typically not a lot of deer activity on those trails, is what I've found. They just, you know, they've been warned so many times over the years. But as far as deer traveling in groups, do you see large doe groups, or are they more like two does, three does here or there?
I mean, I don't really, in my experience in the mountains, unless there's a reason for there to be a really large doe group, for example, you know, like there was a winery that I had access to hunt a few years back. There were a ton of does there.
Yeah.
so that was, you know, that's a little, it's an outlying factor, you know, because there was so much food that it could support a bumper crop of does. But most of the time I see pockets of two to three.
Yeah.
Now, every now and then you'll get does where, let's say you get a section of the national forest that's butted up to by a bunch of cattle land. So like in Virginia, you know, there is agriculture. You'll see ag, like some corn and whatnot, but it tends to be more cattle country in my experience. So that those big grass fields, you know, I think some of my favorite mountain hunters to listen to on podcasts will refer to, agriculture that butts up to the national forest. And sometimes it is actually ag. But a lot of the time, it's just hay fields or cattle
just
fields.
Just those,
you know, it's
underlying factors.
Just green fields.
Those big fields from a monotonous forest, like we were talking about a second ago.
Exactly. And those deer they'll feed on that. And you could get, you know, more does in an area like that, you know, potentially. But I agree with you. I think that you typically see them in twos or threes. You know, you're not seeing big, large groups like, you know, 6, 7, 8 or something like that. At least I don't usually run into them that way.
And, you know, we talked before we got on here, I mentioned, you know, like some low deer density stuff. You know, a lot of the times the mountains do hold a lower deer density, but what I'm seeing is these areas that have lower deer density, they have bigger bucks. That's just my take on where I'm hunting. It's probably different everywhere, varies, but it seems like the age structure gets a little bigger because I think less people hunt it because they get discouraged when they don't see deer. Everybody wants to see deer when they hunt, you know.
The same principle applies back home. So, for example, some of the places that I have the most success in Central North Carolina, you know, or in Eastern North Carolina as well, are places where, like, there may be areas surrounding it that have a ton of deer per square mile, but that public specifically or that area specifically doesn't hold a ton of deer for whatever reason. You know, the same way it does in the mountains. So you may have pockets of land where you may have a large quantity of deer, but for the wider spread of landscape, there's not a huge population of deer. And I agree. I think it discourages people, one, from going in there and hunting because you do want to see deer. But two, the added benefit is, you know, for the mature deer that are there, they have a surplus of food opportunity. You know, yeah. Because they have a lot of opportunity at nutrition, which is why they can grow bigger. But you have to, on the side of that, you have to be comfortable with walking a lot.
Yes.
You know, and to be fair, you know, not everybody in the world is out there trying to kill, you know, a giant buck. I think that there's some people or many people that are happy shooting a good buck every year. I certainly, you know, I'm happy shooting a good buck, but I aspire to shooting a great buck. You know, so whenever I'm trying to do that, the reason I walk so much is because I'm trying to almost walk myself out of a good buck and into a great buck.
Yeah.
You know, get
where nobody else is looking. And, you know, you hear that a lot. And I've heard some people, you know, they started running into people deeper and deeper, and it was kind of flip-flop, and you know, some bigger deer were closer to the parking areas and not as far back. It was kind of funny how that changed. But man, I putting time in the mountains, you will get a workout, that is for sure.
Oh, for sure. And I think that that's a great point right there, is just you got to think about, like, if you tie everything we've talked about so far together, I think everybody likes to put hunting into a specific bucket. Like when they go, they're like, I'm hunting a feed tree today, or I'm hunting this field edge today, or I'm hunting this today. And in all actuality, it is simple. Like hunting is a simple thing. You know, the deer, I think, are more simple than we give them credit for. But the equation you have to put together is complex, right?
Yeah.
So that equation could be, you know, okay, you know, let's say it's late October, so you're a pre-rut, depending on what part of the country you're in, or, you know, if it's Alabama, it could be November or December, depending on where you are. But let's say it's pre-rut, so your does are feeding, your bucks might not be feeding as much, but you got sign laying down, you know, so you're trying to figure out what to prioritize. So if you're going to go hunt food, you know, are you hunting food that targets does, or are you hunting the downwind side of food? You know, and if you're hunting the downwind side of food where a buck could be going, are you hunting existing sign, or are you hunting sign that you expect to pop up? You know, when you make that decision, are you, you know, what's your wind direction looking like? Is it blowing to or from, you know, that core bedding area? Do you have to let that day sit, that spot sit until it's time to actually execute, you know, or back off and observe, you know, and you have to put those pieces together, you know, the same way you do anything else. It's not.
You want to succeed. You want to fish. You want to be one of the greatest.
Tune in to West Marine's Life on the Water, presented by Costa Custom Boats, every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. Pursuing wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
You'd think, with four of us spread out on a tiny island, that the task of tagging a whitetail would not be a big thing. But, as I've learned, no matter where I've been, Whitetails can be damn tricky.
Pursuing wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
What the deer do and how they live their life, food, water, cover, is the simple equation. But the hard equation is like putting all of the dots within that based on your specific sit, right? Like you still have to get within 25 to 50 yards of a whitetail to get him harvested.
That's a small circle, you know. That's to get that close to mature whitetail, that's a big task. Especially in the mountains. Do you deal with a lot of crazy winds when you're hunting in the mountains?
Oh, dude. So the hill country stuff is, I love it because I think it narrows down, like you can kind of predict what deer are going to do a little bit easier. Because the terrain really helps with that. You know, you can count on your rule of thirds pretty well. You can look for certain like ridge points and secondary points that'll help you out and different slope faces. But man, the thing you can never count for is that freaking wind, man. Yeah. It is tough, you know? But that's the thing. One of the big, and this comes from a group of guys that I learned this from guys that hunt the Driftless area in Southwest Wisconsin and Northeast Iowa, which is essentially a lot like our mountains in North Alabama, South Georgia, you know, parts of Virginia. It's like pretty big stuff, but it's not, they're not mountains with tops. So if you're picturing a mountain in your mind, obviously our eastern mountains they're all big wooded national forest type business, right? Yeah. Well, in the Midwest, a lot of that Driftless area, they kind of topped those off. It's like they chopped the tops off the mountains and they put ag up there. And then there's ag in the bottom. So you got all these big rolling mountains, big hills and trout streams running through them and everything. But there's ag on both top and bottom. So you're fighting the same battle, but now with the addition of food, which makes it a little bit more complicated. Because you never really know where they're going. But the point being is that issue with the wind is applicable in a lot of different places. And it's brutal no matter where you are.
I'm learning that these deer are where they are that I'm hunting because it's almost bulletproof because of the wind. Just to let you know, I had a buck bed down up against a bluff wall at like 50 yards. He laid there for an hour and wind shifted or something. Next thing I knew, he was blowing it out of there. It's been a buck I had an encounter with 3 years ago, and the same thing happened. He was chasing a doe, and wind hit off the wall and went down and hit her, and, you know, the rest is history. But it's just here, it's always hard when you don't have the best time for us to hunt those is in a front when that wind sure enough is going to be steady. And, you know, you don't get too many of those here in Alabama just because we're down here. But we've had one this week. The wind stayed pretty consistent, but, you know, my luck, I haven't been able to hunt any.
I think that's something that you could maybe put into the, I mean, well, that buck is probably different if it's specifically a bluff wall situation and he's there and he's impenetrable, right? Like, you know, unless there's a certain change in the weather, I assume.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the first time I've seen him bed right there. But I've seen him in the area multiple times, multiple bucks use it. But, it's just, I had him on a kind of a rotation. Like you said, the deer in the mountains can be a little more easy, to pattern. And kind of had him on a rotation, and sure enough, he did it. Just was, you know, riding the thick stuff a little out of range, and just couldn't put it together. But man, that's the story everybody has. You know, they were just out of range, almost did it, and that is what it is. But Jake, I don't want to take any more of your time, man. I appreciate. Appreciate you coming on here. Was there anything else you may want to touch on before we jump off here?
No, man, I think that if I had to reiterate, you know, if anybody's out there, whether you're struggling with your season, or if you're just trying to kind of find your stride, I think that the biggest things that you can do, whether you're a new or a veteran hunter, and I say this as somebody who practices this himself, like I try to remind myself of this constantly, is first of all, make sure you're walking as much or more than you're hunting. Go look at everything. Don't be afraid to bump deer around. Obviously, don't do it haphazardly all the time. You know, be cognizant of what you're doing and take note of everything and try to bump them as little as possible. But you can't hunt an area if you don't know what it is. You know, you can't hunt a place that you don't know anything about. You know, and then back out with that 10,000 foot view and look at your limiting resources. Identify what, you know, on a scale of priority, what the deer that you're hunting are going to prioritize based on what they have the least of. You know, and then just try to focus on that. Continue to walk, continue to look. And no matter whether you have a large deer density or if you got a small deer density, you just got to focus on covering ground. You know, it's the simple part of that equation that is like the most important. And it's kind of the most frustrating because you may walk for multiple days until you find what you want. And that's okay. It's okay to walk and not find the right sign. You know, that just means you don't need to be there. Yeah. You know, and then when you do find the right sign, you will have saved yourself a whole season of sitting somewhere that you didn't need to be. I look at deer hunting a lot the same way I do turkey hunt right now. And I'll leave it at this, is when I go turkey hunting, I don't want to kill the silent gobbler at 1 p.m. I want to kill the bird that wants to play the game with me.
Yep.
And it's the same way with whitetails. I'm not out there to sit a whitetail out for 47 days until I can get him killed. Right. That's not my game.
No.
My game is to find the one that I can plan around, that I can pattern, that I can put that puzzle together with and do and get after. And the only way that I can ever do that is by covering ground.
Well, you heard it here. Cover some ground, guys. We appreciate y'all listening this week, and y'all take care.
A life that has the stories to back it. A life to be proud of. It's a Winchester life.
Yeah, baby. 6'8 Western. Oh, mule deer, baby, right there.
Tune in every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
Oh, that's awesome.
Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience. Brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts. Every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. The destination for outdoor entertainment.
Four in the morning.
Join me, Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois, and the whole crew here at Duck Camp Dinners every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
Birds up in